Welcome to episode 89 of the Infectious Historians podcast. I'm Merle.
And I'm Lee.
It's March 20th, 2022. And today we're going to celebrate our two-year anniversary on this podcast. And perhaps more importantly, it's the first time Lee and I have seen each other since COVID. So we're actually doing a live episode, which I guess is what some people normally have always done. So hi, Lee, from across this bench in the Dickinson courtyard.
Yeah. Hi, Merle. Yeah. We're both sitting here together for the first time, really, in 2.5 years. It's great to be here at Princeton, New Jersey, where we just finished up our first live conference post-COVID, or like during COVID, I guess. The conference was about the Framing the Late Antique and Early Medieval Economy project, which both of us have been associated with since 2014, actually. It was great to really have this second international conference here at Princeton and meet people from all around, internationals, Americans, and so on.
Yeah, it was a great 3 days here in Princeton, as my wife calls it, the greatest place on earth. And we got to see a number of people and friends, which was quite wonderful, to be honest. And Lee, I have to say, to commend you, you put on a great conference, which was partially hybrid. So congrats.
Thanks, Merle. I appreciate your compliments.
Well, I know they mean just so much to you. But anyways, today we're going to do something different, which is we're going to obviously catch up in person and reflect on where we are after 2 years of this podcast plus 2+ years of COVID. And I was actually talking to someone at this conference, Lee, about something that had taken place in the spring of 2019. So let's say just 3 years ago. And I actually thought it took place about 10 years ago.
Yeah, a lot has changed in the academic world over the past 2.5 years, so to speak. And it definitely felt much different from the experience we've had in the past 2.5 years. I mean, both of us, Merle, if I understand correctly, have given many talks during COVID, but they were all on Zoom. We attended many conferences, but those were, again, all on Zoom. So just a bunch of people who listen to a talk and maybe have some discussion afterwards. And there was no real social interaction in almost all of these conferences, which is actually a big thing of in-person conferences. So for me, at least, getting back here, seeing other people in person, communicating with them before and after talks over coffee or whatever was actually something I missed a lot. And I'm grateful to have the opportunity to actually have come back here and attended this conference that I organized. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way to put it. But can I ask you, Lee, this was your first trip flying outside of Israel since COVID. So how was, I guess, both the flight, the immigration with COVID, and maybe even as you prepare to go back, what was that like?
Yeah, Merle, you have been flying much more than, I mean, definitely me. I have not been on a plane for 2.5 years until a few days ago when I came here. So things were definitely unusual, a bit unusual. Well, the first thing I noticed is that it was all very unclear what you needed to do. It still is kind of unclear what you need or do not need to do and to move from country to country. So that does put in some amount of stress that to make sure that no one is going to turn you down on the plane or something because you didn't take the right test or something like that. But after that, I mean, travel seemed kind of sad when I left Israel. Several of the shops that are like these iconic shops that you have like on your way to your gate were closed. I mean, it seemed like people were recovering. I mean, people in these specific shops, there was more traffic, but definitely much, much less than anything pre-COVID. The flight itself, it was funny, right? I mean, it's like we all had this ritual, whereas we had to put on masks and flight attendants would walk around and tell people to put on their masks. But then all of a sudden there's like dinner and drinks and breakfast, and then everyone just takes off their masks and socializes as if nothing is unusual. So I'm not entirely sure that made a lot of sense, but that's what we did do. And here coming into the US, I mean, it was the easiest by far. I mean, I didn't have to spend any time in standing in queues in immigration. That was a positive thing on all this.
Did you get a whole row to yourself?
No. We were two people in like a row of three. So it was not as horrible as it usually is. Another interesting thing I noticed is that, I mean, the airplane, the airport, the train to Princeton, everyone was masked the entire time. But then I reached Princeton and apparently the university decided a few days before I got here that masking is no longer mandatory. So nobody put masks on here, which was a bit unusual, right? Because I spent several hours like completely masked, probably like almost a day completely masked. And then it just like, I got into this place where there are no masks involved anymore.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way to describe kind of what it's like.
Yeah, Merle. So what has your experience been, right? Because I think you just drove up here, so it was much easier for you, but it's still like one of the first scholarly interactions you've had, or maybe you had like a bit more than I did.
Yeah, I think this is my first live conference, and it was actually quite nice to see people. I have to say it was a lot better than Zoom talks where you just give the talk and then you just go off Zoom and maybe you talk to the person who hosted you for like 10 minutes after everyone else leaves. You know me, based on this podcast, Lee, I'm a schmoozy guy, for lack of a better term. So, you know, you do realize coffees and dinners are really key. So I had some really great conversations about all types of things with, I don't know, a half dozen people who were at this conference. So that was quite nice. And the other thing I'll say, I guess we should say up front before we turn to the meat of the interview, is we apologize for the sound, but this actually goes to kind of what's happening at Princeton, as Lee said, is all the COVID protocols are basically still in place, which for this podcast means all the doors are key card locked.
Yeah, so they did remove the masking requirement, but we cannot enter any building on campus. So it is a bit weird. We're just sitting in a courtyard and recording this. Even with our sound editor Amitai's great skills in sound editing, I'm pretty sure some of this will probably be heard by our audience. But there really isn't anything we can do. We can't go into any building. So no power. I mean, we have some internet, but no nice room and no bathroom for Merle. I mean, he's going to have like a 3-hour drive back home after this.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that, Lee. I will say, you know, we are in a courtyard that's directly outside the history department. And actually, we're sitting on a bench that's directly in front of my doctoral advisor's office that I've spent a lot of time on in my life, I guess my academic career. So it does have some personal, you know, connections with it, but I'm sure it won't make the sound all that great. So again, our apologies.
But I think it does show the difficulties of getting back to normal, right? Because, I mean, you make the central decision of changing one regulation, but you have all these other parts of, I mean, in this case, parts of the university here, different institutions, individuals who made decisions, and they have to walk those decisions back. And I think it's going to be a bit more difficult than usual to do so.
Yeah. The other funny part I have to say of the conference, Lee, is all the lunches had to be brown bag lunches. They couldn't be laid out on a platter, except for one day when they actually were, but the other 2 days had to be brown bag lunches, which of course everyone just takes the lunch out of the bag and eats it. So even if you had been wearing a mask, everyone would have removed their mask at that point. So I don't quite understand the theater that was happening there.
Yeah, and there were a lot of other things as well, right? So, I mean, the food thing, I'm not sure it made a lot of sense at this point. I think there was an earlier regulation that was canceled that people from within the university could not eat with people outside the university in university events, if I remember correctly. I may be wrong about this, but I vaguely remember this being one of the regulations we had to deal with when we were organizing this conference. But one of the things I noticed is that, you know, in the university library here, you have these scanners, which I used very frequently as a student here. And these are like fast scanners. So it's all the touch screen, and you put the book and you scan whatever pages. So it turns out they still have all these signs on them that you're not supposed to touch them. You're supposed to wipe them first. Then you're supposed to wait for an hour. I'm not entirely sure why you have to wait for an hour before you use a scanner after you wipe it. That is beyond me. But it's still there. It's still there. All the computers are all locked out. I mean, they're all out of service because you're not supposed to sit in there and use computers during COVID. But COVID is definitely not felt here by most people I see. And yet is still influencing the way we behave and interact. And the fact that we're locked out and still sitting in this windy courtyard.
Yeah, no, I think what it actually goes to show is, you know, the difficulties and the layers that are put into place for good reason in many of these processes. And then, you know, lifting, say, a mask mandate, which they did here because the case count is very low, doesn't lift changes with dining services clearly or with security, which is, I imagine, who's in charge of these key cards and other types of things like that.
And I think that if at the beginning of COVID, kind of like trying to reflect on all this, at the beginning of COVID, there was a lot of discussion about where's the evidence or where's the science, what does the science say, and so on. And as we've been talking here, I mean, a lot of these things just became these rituals or a theater, to use your word, Merle, which have been kind of like frozen in time from some point of the during the beginning or middle of COVID. And I mean, the question is, what will make these things change? I mean, some of these things could be even positive, right? So the conference we were on, for example, we originally planned this conference to be an in-person conference and we hoped COVID would be over. It turned out not to be over. And then we had a phase in which we thought about maybe moving it to all online, like the vast majority of other academic conferences of the past 2.5 years. And we ended up choosing to go with the hybrid conference, which is to say that there are many people in the room and some people, sometimes many people on Zoom, and they somehow are supposed to interact with each other. It's usually a bit awkward. I think it was a bit awkward here as well. I mean, because the people on Zoom don't really feel the room and don't really see what's going on. But I mean, on that hand, you can see this is a positive thing, right? So, I mean, allowing people to engage or attend this conference from some very far away place is probably one of the better legacies of COVID, so to speak.
Yeah, I'll just say two things before we move on, Lee. The first thing is this is a great example of your favorite theorist, Foucault, and biosecurity. I know how much you love him.
We should still have an episode on Foucault, Merle. I mean, you owe me this from the first year of this podcast.
Maybe the third year anniversary episode will be your Foucault episode. How about that? I'll promise it. And the other thing I'll say, you know, to compliment you and the other organizers of the conference is actually you guys did a really good job with the hybrid format, about as good as you could have get. But you did have to have a lot more expensive technological infrastructure, right? So you needed multiple cameras, you needed multiple undergrads who you're presumably paying, hopefully, to like walk around with microphones so everyone on Zoom could hear. You needed to like constantly remind people that when they start asking a question, they introduce themselves because the people on Zoom can't see them. So I think some of this we'll get used to and we'll get better at, but it also just goes to say that, you know, Princeton obviously could just plop down whatever the extra technological and human resources cost was, but a lot of places can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's all true. I will say that we have and are and will pay our undergraduate workers, of course. But another point here is that this was also probably, as far as we understood here, probably the first international conference at Princeton, or at least our part of Princeton, again, as far as we could tell. So what this means is that a lot of the resources that we used, I mean, both financial resources, but also people's time, was not taken up by other conferences. Usually this university is very busy with conferences and events and so on. And the fact that there was nothing else going on at the same time, what made things much easier for us.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think now maybe we will transition just slightly to talk about kind of where we've been, where we are, and where we want to go. And as I said, you know, we're hopeful that guests write in and continue to write in and give us new ideas moving forward. So the first thing I'll say, Lee, I was thinking about this the other day in terms of guests and how we have people on, right? Because people ask me this actually all the time. How do you select guests? And for a while, I kind of was like, I don't know how we select guests. But what I actually realized was there is kind of three stages. Maybe you agree, maybe you don't. The first was, I would say, we have no idea what we're doing. And then we harass our friends and colleagues to get them to come on. The second was we went for people whose work we've read and we've admired, and we asked them to come on and they were pretty willing to come on. And now the third stage is kind of, we've gone through a lot of people, probably all of our networks that we know. And so now we get good recommendations from, I would say, other scholars who we have on. And one thing I'd like to do moving forward, I would say, is aim to bring even more global perspectives to this podcast. So I think we could do a lot better job of having more histories of Africa, histories of Asia, those types of places that we actually haven't done, I think, enough of.
Yeah, I think it's the way to grow these podcasts, right? I mean, you start with who you know, and then you kind of branch out of there. Some of our past guests have also recommended new guests. So past guests as in the past, a month, several months afterwards, maybe even more, they kind of like get in touch with us and say, oh, you know, there's a new book that came out that might be interesting for your podcast, or a new scholar who gave some kind of great talk or something. So involving those people, I mean, that's the way we hear about more research or more people, more scholars to bring on to this podcast.
Yeah, you know, it actually makes me think that one good way moving forward, such as we have other in-person conferences, would be to do a couple of panels, or you know, maybe even just one panel at the American Historical Association, which is the big catch-all conference for all historians, where you bring together people across time and space, because usually these panels will be like, you know, ancient histories of disease or medieval histories of the disease, right? So it's a select group of people that you know, but I think, Lee, hopefully you agree, that we probably know enough people now that we could actually do a pretty long temporal global scale if we wanted to put that together.
Yeah, we could. And, you know, I mean, kind of reflecting on the conference that we finished like half an hour ago, another idea that we might want to continue or think about is to have some kind of group discussion on this podcast. So instead of just the two of us interviewing one person, and with one exception, I mean, I think we had one episode where we interviewed two people. So we can have some sort of round table or sorts of either guests with us asking questions to the guests, or like a group discussion that kind of reflects on some of the ideas and themes that have come up in this podcast and maybe specific episodes.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good idea to start there. And I just want to pause for a second, Lee, to say there's a, what I think is a young man wrapped in toilet paper walking across the quad. So I just want to add that to the podcast.
Yeah, these are things that we have not seen over the past 2.5 years, let's say.
But to go back to your point, I think you're right, Lee. I think we could start on the podcast and then use that as a nice way and jumping off point to do that more broadly at something like the AHA.
Yeah, because I think that one of the points that has been recurring in more or less almost all the episodes since the very beginning, and after we moved away from our small circle of friends, is the need to make this a broader discussion, to bring different people working on different diseases and in different ways, different methodologies, different locations, different times, to bring all these people together. And there has been some of this that's being done. I think the general feeling that we've had on the podcast, and I think most of our guests as well, is that there hasn't been enough, or there isn't enough of this. So maybe that could be our small contribution to this field moving forward.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea at all. And also, you know, maybe then you and I, Lee, can start the burgeoning field of histories of disease and pandemics that, you know, probably does need to exist in some form. And we can start a journal if you want, Lee, and we can start an edited volume series and a monograph series.
Well, I'll leave you to do all the series. I'm not going to do that anytime soon. So another thing I did want to announce here, I guess, is that my university has asked me to give a big disease in history or diseases in history intro class to humanities students at my university. So I'm going to do that next year. But I think this podcast has been, is, and hopefully will continue to be useful for me to kind of think about the ways in which I can tell a story. I mean, it's supposed to be a lecture class, so most of it is going to be me lecturing, but to try to bring all these themes together, maybe build a bit with Janet Kay, who we hosted twice and who also gave a pandemics class, maybe build on some of what she's been doing and kind of take it in my own way.
That sounds very cool. How big is this course supposed to be, like?
It depends. It's going to be open for all students in the humanities. So classes like this usually range between 70 and 200. The funny thing is that I'm not sure if it's that funny, but if I get less than 70 people in the class, I would not get a TA, that is a teaching assistant. So I'll have to do all the work myself. So I do want this to be a popular class model.
Well, if you need any teaching material, I have a bunch, because as you know, I've taught a shorter version of this, and actually I'm going to teach a course, smaller one, in the fall. So we can collaborate on what to do, what not to do, what works, what doesn't work.
Actually, on this point of teaching, I mean, we know that our audience is mixed. We know that some of you are people in academia, whether faculty members, whether postdocs, grad students, undergraduates. And we know some of you guys are not, but for the people in academia, if you're interested in kind of more episodes on teaching, the challenges of teaching, of conveying this material, what works or what doesn't work. So shoot us an email and we might just like dedicate an episode or two to keep reflecting on teaching this material, especially now in the context of COVID.
I mean, I think it's probably something we should do if we're both teaching the class in the fall to reflect upon it. Your semesters are stupidly organized, so we'll have to wait longer than I would like, but we can at least talk about it and probably make it happen and see where we go.
Yeah, maybe the model we had with Janet would work, right? So have one of these episodes early on or just before we start, then maybe one episode during the semester and one episode reflecting on what worked and what didn't work.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And I think that's a nice springboard to you know, an area of building out what I think will probably become, at least in the short term, a popular set of courses, probably on a lot of college campuses, you know, in the near future.
Yeah, Merle, you have your own website, right? The Middle Ages for Educators. And I think you do have some content there on plague or more broadly pandemic related issues.
Yeah, no, I do. There's a whole page that you can use as a teaching lesson and videos embedded and teaching material translations, those types of things that are, I think, very useful. So you should look at that, Lee, before you design your course.
No, I will. But I think that my class will probably be geared more towards the modern side of things. I mean, I will obviously spend some time on the ancient pandemics, diseases that we've spoken about here on this podcast. But I think I'll try to make this history relevant to as many students as possible. And in that context, it seems to me that speaking to like modern concerns or contemporary concerns would probably be more helpful or more attractive to more students.
Well, I'll just say this, having taught it, and I'll teach it like this again, it's actually quite good to teach both quite a bit of pre-modern and modern. Now, I think a lot of the students will probably get a hold of the modern stuff and be more interested in that. That I agree with you. But I would say, having taught the course and having read stuff on all the pandemics across, you know, several thousand years, certain themes do come up in the ancient stuff just as they do in modern pandemics. And you kind of see that, you know, just as Charles Rosenberg would say, as we had Keith Whalew on recently, there are certain common themes that just keep coming up over and over again. Yes, and Lee is now pointing the fact that Keith's office is also directly behind us.
So in your class, what was the ratio of modern to pre-modern material that you had?
I probably did about 40% pre-modern and 60% modern. But it's also easier to do the modern stuff because there's more known about modern pandemics, right? So you can do cholera more easily and these types of things. And the ancient ones, if you want to do pandemics, you're limited to a small number, about 3 or 4. Now, if you want to broaden out, depending on your weeks, to just disease more broadly, right? We've had great guests on this podcast who've talked about malaria, talked about, you know, tuberculosis, talked about leprosy. So you could do those as well.
Yeah, no. So that's definitely something I'll be thinking on during the summer as I start building this class. I mean, once my semester finishes, which is not going to happen in, I think, 3 months or so, but definitely something to keep in mind for the upcoming third year of this podcast.
Yeah, so I'll just remind our listeners that your semester schedule is stupid. So I think, Lee, at least my plan, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree, is we kind of keep going at the pace we've been going for the last 6 or 7 months, which is episodes about every other week, ideally on Thursdays we release them, but we're trying to do. Sometimes, you know, life intervenes.
Yeah, it's usually my life that intervenes, so apologies to the Umrol and all the listeners out there.
It's usually your daughter who gets sick. So, you know, if we want to cast blame.
Or she might get sick, but not acknowledged as being sick, as was the case sometime before our last episode.
Yeah, fair enough. So I think that's our plan, is to keep going, having guests on. If you all have suggestions for people we should have on. I mean, one thing I hope will start to happen in the next, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months is people will have published books now or almost done with books, kind of like we had Colin Elliott a few weeks ago, which are on disease, but written mostly during COVID. And so that'll be interesting to get kind of, as you would likely, meta reflection thoughts, you know, after the fact.
Yeah, it's actually a good point. And one thing we might want to do, maybe in some episode, is to kind of reflect on historical scholarship on COVID. What is out there? How much is out there? Have people tried to like dissect COVID into different waves, so to speak, or phases, maybe, to use a term that we've used here recently on the podcast? Reflect more on COVID, not as an event that we're living through, but as a historical event from the very recent past.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. Another thing I think we could do that would be fun is we could go through, like, you know, Washington Post or New York Times or Wall Street Journal op-eds over the course of COVID and see how that looks poor.
Yeah, that actually could be a really good episode to read the op-eds from what, like January, February, March 2020, and try to reflect on how bad or how well. I mean, some people I think did have a pretty good idea of what might happen. Others definitely did not.
Yeah, I mean, that might bring in someone in communications or journalism would be good to have on to discuss that and discuss how that works and the process behind it.
Yeah. We should maybe consider bringing someone like that to one of the next few episodes.
The other thing that I think I'd be interested in doing moving forward, Lee, is to bring on historically inclined people or scientists or others who are thinking about COVID now that, you know, I think in a lot of fields, especially the natural sciences, obviously, this is a well-established field almost, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, although we have had some non-historians or people who are further away from the field. And I think those episodes have brought like some interesting insights that we wouldn't have gotten if we were talking only to historians. So yeah, we can continue to do that. I think that could be helpful to try to reflect upon this shared experience that maybe not all of us, but most of us had over the past 2.5 years.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also curious about how COVID has shifted people's research and if that's gone back to something pre-COVID or not. But maybe that's for someone to tell us.
I mean, I can say that I met a colleague actually here at Princeton who is relatively young, has a couple of kids. And I mean, he told me that COVID, just as I feel, by the way, he told me that COVID kind of wrecked his life. I mean, not because of the pandemic itself, but because of all the, so to speak, byproducts of the pandemic, right? So the much higher load on our personal lives and taking care of our kids, of kind of dealing with our children's daycare being all of a sudden shut down because of COVID or because of some government decision. So yeah, I mean, it has been interesting. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And a lot of these ripple effects will be for historians in 20, 30, 40 years to tease out, I think, across the board. So if we're still doing this then, Lee, we can have them on, which is to say basically your daughter as a historian.
Yeah, now another thing we might want to ask is now that COVID is, again, seemingly moving towards finishing, let's hope so, we might want to think about the different ways in which institutions, and I think we're, because most of the people on this podcast, most of the guests are academics, so we've had a lot of attention given to academic life and universities more broadly. So one thing we might want to do is think about the different ways in which these academic institutions have either helped or maybe not really helped or not really supported their workers in trying to mitigate some of the COVID effects.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, Lee. I'll be curious to know what you say about your university.
Yeah, well, we maybe can have a discussion about that at some point in one of the future episodes where we'll have a guest and we can all share how our universities have dealt with COVID with regards to their employees.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea as well. And I have to say, Lee, everyone is staring at us weirdly in this courtyard as we record.
Yeah, we're just two, I guess, middle-aged men at this point. Just sitting in a courtyard and speaking to ourselves with a very large microphone, which you brought all the way from Annapolis, Merle. And you also have your headphones on, which I don't.
You know, some of us have good mics and some of us are jealous of said good mics, is what I have to say.
So you're saying that my pink mic that I actually brought here all the way from Israel, you're saying it's not good enough. Okay.
Well, I'll remind you, I brought you some presents from Annapolis because you've left stuff in my house now for 2.5 years, actually. There's a sewing machine, which I did not bring you because I did not think you could put that on the plane. But I did bring you some baseball cards.
I saw the baseball cards. I saw a couple of dresses for my daughter. And so thanks for that.
So Lee, I have to ask you, as we wrap up this episode, does it feel like a previous life that you lived in Princeton now? You know, like a long, long time ago? Or do you still feel like, you know, you were once here?
Somewhere in the mix. I think you've been here longer than I was. And you also came back much more frequently than I have, right? So you were here like a few months ago, I guess, or maybe several months ago.
Yeah, we've come back maybe 3 or 4 times, actually, since we moved to Annapolis, at least.
And that was 2 years ago?
Yeah, but we also came up in the fall to see people. And we still had a couple of friends who were here through this past academic year. And now most of them are gone.
Yeah, so for me, I haven't been here in 3 years. So there's much more of a gap. Some iconic buildings have gone. Some new buildings have been built. So, I mean, it's the same, but it's also very different. The outside, again, is relatively similar to what it used to be. The feeling has definitely changed, right? So maybe the best example is us being locked out here. So a place which I kind of called home for 6 or 7 years of my life. I now cannot enter it anymore, basically because of COVID and the regulations that we covered earlier on.
That's fair.
But I have taken some time to go visit my old houses. We had two houses here, one house, one apartment. So go see what happened there. Neighborhoods have definitely changed. I do see things in a different eye. And I think it has been helpful, especially to reflect on a place that has been close and dear to me for such a long time. Again, 6 or 7 years here. But what about you, Merle? What's your experience of coming back here as a professional rather than just coming to meet other people you know? I mean, how many people you know are still around?
Yeah, I would say there's still a decent number of people from when I was here. And I certainly know a decent number of faculty and still some of the upper level grad students. So I had a couple of coffees and a couple of drinks with people who I hadn't seen. I will say it was kind of weird. This was, I guess, my first conference or talk back at Princeton. And so there was just a different dynamic, right? That I know the place really well, right? I knew how to get around the library for when we were having talks or where the bathrooms were, stuff like that. That's actually complicated if you don't know a university. But as you said, I'm also apart from it now. So that's always going to be, I think, a little weird.
Yeah, no, it's again, it was the first experience post-COVID, and let's hope it's the first of many such experiences and that we'll keep on meeting in all these various academic conferences down the road. So I guess that at this point, we can wrap up this short episode. We'd like to thank our sponsors at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem and Penn State University for funding the podcast. We'd like to thank our great team, our sound editor, Amitai Bar-Levi, who's probably going to have a slightly more difficult work this time, trying to cancel out the loud wind, and our webmaster, Virder Kanat.
Until next time, stay safe. Hopefully you get to see old friends you haven't seen in a while and visit old places you haven't been.